Hello, good morning, and welcome to another edition of Word on the Street. I'm Rob Lawrence, EMS People Watcher and Chief Operating Officer of the Richmond Ambulance Authority. In this week's show, we're going to travel to Washington, D.C. for the EMS Today conference and its associated GEMS Games, a real favourite with EMS providers. We're going to meet a team from the London Ambulance Service who came over for the first time to compete. I took a moment or two to speak to Paul Johnson and Nick Sillett from the LAS around some things that are happening back over the pond in London, particularly advanced practice paramedics, their response times and clinical quality measures, and European health and safety law, which of course could be something that's going to inform our very own culture of safety. In the second half of the show, I caught up with Dr. Peter Meany, who was also in Washington, D.C., as part of the American Heart Association CPR Throwdown Challenge, encouraging us all to push hard and fast and master that very important skill. More from Dr. Meany later on in the show. But first, let's talk to the boys from London. So, hello. For this segment, I'm at the GEMS conference in Washington, D.C., and I'm going to have a bit of a home treat for me, as we're going to have lots of accents that sound just like me today. So if you're listening in America, there's no apologies. If you're listening in the UK, this is a London Ambulance special. I'm joined by two gentlemen here from London Ambulance Service who have come across to Washington, along with other members of LAS, Mr. Paul Johnson and Mr. Nick Sillett. So, Nick, who are you? What do you do? And what's your story?
So I'm a paramedic for London Ambulance Service and also staff officer to the Deputy Medical Director, who's Dr. Fenella Wrigley.
Excellent. And Paul.
Hello, everybody. 33 years working for London Ambulance Service. Currently work under the Director of Paramedic Education, who is Mr. Mark Whitbread. And I do one day a week working for the Medical Directorate under the guidance of our Medical Director, Fiona Moore.
Now, Mark Whitbread and Fiona Moore are names that are known, of course, to folk on this side of the Atlantic. Fiona Moore is your medical director and a member of Eagles. The Eagles conference is coming up very shortly down in Dallas. And Mark Whitbread was here last year, in fact, when he launched the STEMI program that the guys from the US, Ted Settler, came over to film. And that was a great success here.
Something we're very, very proud of. The work that Mark has done in London with cardiac care is absolutely fantastic. We're working on cardiac arrest survival, we've been working on STEMIs, we worked on the hyperacute stroke units, and we've rolled out over the last couple of years the four major trauma centres that serve our city. So Mark's work is legendary.
That's good to know. Now, of course, for those of us that read the London Evening Standard, and I certainly saw this yesterday, that you're about to make another leap into clinical excellence, and that's the creation of advanced practice paramedics. And again, this is what the newspaper said, and you can tell me exactly in a second what the story is, but you've got HEMS, Helicopter Emergency Medical Services in London. Of course, that's the helicopter service that flies around, but you're creating a tier, I wouldn't say below that, but in addition to that, that's going to assist with those hyperacute patients, Nick?
Yes, we've currently recruited 12, and the grand plan is to have 36 over the next 3 years as part of our clinical career structure.
So in terms of training, that's probably your question, Paul. What advanced skills will these advanced practice paramedics have?
It's actually work in progress as we speak. The modules are being written and will be rolled out shortly, and our training starts when I get back in February through March, April and May, and our 12 new advanced paramedics will be trained up in advanced airway techniques. They will be carrying extra drugs, ketamine, midazolam, and generally be given some good CRM to allow good clinical leadership with all aspects of clinical care within London.
Okay, and so the first ones are going to be out on the streets live then in how long?
Probably we're looking at the educational package over the next 3 to 4 months, and then obviously from May, June and July, I should imagine our advanced paramedics will be at two sites within London, and we'll be providing 24/7 care to those patients that require it.
Excellent. So how many applicants were there? I mean, this clearly is going to be a very popular program to be a part of, but
this,
I mean,
this was a very, ballpark sort of very, very exciting within our service. and generated a lot of interest. I think the wider picture is that London Ambulance Service are introducing a clinical career structure so that we've actually got different levels for people to come in at and to accelerate to. And if we look at our clinical team leader positions, we've got about 100, circa 150 team leaders that were very interested in this advanced role. And it attracted a lot of interest. About 250 packs went out internally to applicants to consider applying for the particular post that was advertised, of which 80 people went through to shortlisting. And we had quite a robust selection process, which our 12 candidates were successful from.
So, Paul, I want to pick up on something you just said there, which just triggered a thought that, of course, in the US, we worry about average and fractile response time, and a lot of the industry, a lot of store and industry performance is put purely on the response time, the top gear bit of getting there, getting with the patient. Now, in the UK, I think things have changed to having a little bit of response, but also clinical outcomes. And so what are they, and I mean the UK Ambulance Service, what are you measuring in terms of clinical quality now?
Before I answer the clinical quality, I think it's important to say that our response times are still very important, and our Red 1, 75% response within 8 minutes still stands.
All right, let me stop you there. Red 1 is for what we would call a priority category. It's a category A call, as was in the UK. It's a priority 1 here, but it's those that are very acute. Is that right?
Yep, this is your cardiac arrest call needs somebody there within 8 minutes, and quite rightly. Money is attached to that. If we don't hit those targets, we are, you know, destined to lose for this year £10 million, which is a great deal of money, which is taken away from patient care.
So a lot to play for.
The target is very important that we hit that. With regards to the clinical dashboard that we run, there's a number of areas that we look at. We have target times for door to balloon for STEMIs. With our hyperacute stroke units, we like to get our patients in, again, within set times so that they can be scanned and the appropriate treatment is given. We have a big clinical hub that's been set up where the calls that come in, bearing in mind we get circa 3,500 calls some days, to make the most appropriate decision with regards to whether an ambulance should be sent. So we do sometimes hear and treat, see and treat, and find an appropriate care pathway for those patients that don't all need to go to the A&E department. So, again, there's a number of areas that we look at within that category of patients who obviously determine whether or not that response should be sent.
And this is exactly why we over here in the US should look at how London Ambulance Service do it, because let's talk about the scale for a second. My own service, which is considered a large service, is doing just slightly less a month than you're doing a day in terms of activity. And of course, to maintain that level of activity in London across the expanse of the city, across, what is it, 14 million people, population that live and work there, 14 million people. I mean, that's something that we need to watch, because you have to do this to an extraordinary standard and an extraordinary scale. And I think that people listening need to, you know, kind of realise that we're not the small county, city entities that we're used to here in America. This is a EMS on a huge scale.
I think it's important to illustrate that. If I gave you the figure for cardiac arrest.
Fire away.
Annually, we will respond to 10,000, just over 10,000 cardiac arrests, of which we actively work on 4,000 of those patients. So that's a large database that we collect of information around cardiac arrests.
Right, a huge registry. We were talking about the CARES database here, but you've got a massive registry of patients to obviously pull the evidence, the data, the information from to make the next cycle much better.
Our evidence database goes back to 1995, so we've collected massive amounts of evidence with regards to cardiac arrest. And obviously we're using that data to improve clinical performance. And ultimately, that's where our advanced paramedic role is going to obviously help with the clinical team leaders to make sure that we get effective CRM at those type of calls that require that type of response at the high-end call.
And you have effective clinical leadership. And, of course, we talked about Dr. Moore, and we talked about the assistant medical director, Mark Whitbread, who, of course, has got a degree in cardiology as a paramedic.
He has
Masters in paramedic. That's fantastic. And I've been talking to you guys for the last 2 days, and, of course,
everything you said has had the word clinical in front of it, and I think that's the way to go forward, that you know, we are focusing solely on the clinical excellence and the clinical output. That's very encouraging. And again, on that grand scale, it's London.
I think it's important also to mention the other patients, the elderly female that's fallen, that's got the hip injury. We want to make sure that we target those patients and get there quickly with an appropriate response. And everybody is dealt with clinically in the most appropriate way and taken to the most appropriate centre.
We're sitting here at one of the two largest conferences in the US. We spent some time walking around the vendors hall this morning, and of course there's lots of equipment out there, clinical equipment. There's big vehicle displays in here, and there's equipment for both lifting, handling, manual and handling that we probably haven't seen in the past here, and it might be a surprise to you guys, but the culture of safety is a big thing, and it's emerging here as a theme. And of course, coming from the UK, you're very familiar with the Health and Safety Executive and standards. So, you know, tell us about some of the formal and legally binding standards that you're held to in terms of safety back in the UK and, of course, Europe.
So our vehicles have to meet SEN requirements, which are European standards for the vehicles to meet. As you mentioned, we have the Health and Safety Executive who can come and inspect at any time, and our buildings and vehicles have to meet certain regulations. All of our equipment has to meet certain regulations, including CE marking and some EN standards. Clinically, we have the Care Quality Commission, CQC, who can come and inspect at any time they wish, announced or unannounced, any of our premises, any of our vehicles, any of our staff. Monitor is another agency that keeps staff safe. And obviously all of our paramedics are registered with the HCPC ensure public protection. The Health and Care Professions Council.
We have to get the English acronyms out as well as the US acronyms. That's fine. We'll keep going. So, you know, as people listening know, I was a chief operating officer in the UK, and of course one of the best courses I took was Health and Safety for Executives, which really was a code for telling me how many ways I could go to jail if the guys came in and imposed correction orders. It's big business safety in the UK, and as I said to you before, it's getting bigger here. But of course the best asset and resource you guys have for keeping your staff safe are...
Our staff.
Your staff.
Absolutely. We have a very robust reporting process. So we have instant reporting. We still have paper forms, but we can also do it electronically now. And that's all collated by our governance department, who will look at trends and themes. And then new equipment is bought based on that. So, for example, a new equipment we're looking at currently is carry chairs that will climb down and upstairs, based on feedback from staff.
We already have the main Gorelk lifting cushion that was rolled out some years ago, and obviously that's there to prevent back injuries to our staff.
And they're actually here for the very first time exhibiting in the US. Again, the whole safety thing is on the up.
So yeah. Our vehicles are now equipped with a Manga Elk as standard.
So guys, one of the reasons that you're over here at in Washington is to compete in the GEMS Games, and of course that's an opportunity to pit the good paramedics of London against the rest of the world and demonstrate really your clinical excellence. So how have you found that?
It's been an exciting project to work on, and for us about 3 months ago we decided to run an advert to advertise the GEMS Games. The response was absolutely fantastic. We had 14 teams that competed in our preliminaries to decide which teams should represent London Ambulance Service. And the team that we brought over has come from Edmonton in central London, and Richard, Kevin and Neil, all based at that station and complex where they're team leaders. And as I say, they took out the other 13 teams that were all of a very high standard. But what you saw and what has been delivered here is the best that we've got in London, if not the UK.
And it was good to see them, and I'm still wearing my LAS patch on my conference badge. And of course, you've all been great ambassadors, let me say. You're here in resplendent in your NHS green uniforms with London Ambulance Service paramedic on the back. You know, you are being great ambassadors for London. Now, of course, you took that ambassadorship to a new height today, and the boys are grinning furiously now because we just left the hall. We left the AHA, American Heart Association, High Quality CPR Throwdown Challenge, which, of course, the boys did very well in, didn't they?
We have practiced, obviously, cardiac arrest protocols, CPR, and adopting the pit crew concept. So with all the time that we've spent, our CPR performance has been monitored, And to get 98.8% registered up there at the top of the leaderboard, I'm very, very proud, as Nick is.
Absolutely.
As well.
But Nick, then you went and joined another team, didn't you?
We did. We did a Commonwealth with our team Australia, and we scored slightly less. But there was only two of us, so that's the excuse I'm sticking to.
Right, because you called it Commonwealth. I was screaming from the back, the team needs to be called Convicts and Poms, but nobody wanted to take that title up. But again, it's a great opportunity to demonstrate a number of things, actually. Demonstrate the skill of Team LAS, but to demonstrate really the worldwide essential skill that is CPR. And of course,
absolutely.
Yes, you teamed up with the guy from Queensland, but actually you were effortlessly and seamlessly into the drill as one, and that was really good to see.
Indeed, someone I've never worked with before, only met in the last couple of days. You know, we were actually able to undertake a very good quality. I think we got 87% between us. CPR scenario. So it just goes to show.
Not as good as the guys that work for you then?
No.
Okay, well, I'm sure they'll listen to this, and they are the A team.
Yeah,
but again, it's a key thing that CPR is here. I mean, it's proliferating, and we're going to be talking in the next half of this particular programme segment to Dr. Peter Meaney, who's from the American Heart Association. But the key thing is, it doesn't matter what language you speak, and it doesn't matter where you're from. It matters that you've got the skill and you're prepared to get engaged and do it, whether you're paramedics or whether you're bystanders. And I think that's fantastic.
It's absolutely fantastic, and that's a key thing, because we all know that high quality chest compressions can make a difference in basic life support. And back in the UK, we've got a lot of community responder schemes, public access defibs, and we know that.
And you've got Vinnie Jones.
And we've got Vinnie Jones, yeah, our secret weapon. But we know there's no one big thing that's going to change cardiac arrest survival. It's a number of small things that we work on and make sure that we do as well as we can, and obviously BLS being one of those. And to take back what we have got from the GEMS Games is going to allow us to teach good, high quality CPR to members of the public and to our own staff that work within our organisation.
As a fellow countryman of you, and it's been great to see you over here, I can say you've been great ambassadors for the UK, for LAS, for the NHS Ambulance Service of the UK, and thanks very much for sparing the time to talk to me.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Rob.
So I'm now talking to Pete Meaney, who is in fact from the Department of Anesthesiology and Critical Care Medicine at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Pete, thanks for joining me for this section.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And, of course, you're not here as the paediatrician from the anesthesiology department. Of course, you're here really heading up and being the head judge and the head, advice provider for the AHA Challenge.
It's a great opportunity to get the word out about what we can do to save lives with CPR.
And we were talking to the guys from LAS, and of course you've had really an international set of contenders today.
Absolutely.
Who have been in great spirits, and of course they've shown one thing, that no matter where you are, what language you speak, this is one language we should all learn together.
Absolutely. I think it's been a great day so far. We're looking forward to the afternoon contestants, but there's really a passion for high-quality CPR at this event. I think it's clear that everyone knows that high-quality CPR saves lives. The unfortunate thing is there's such wide variability in the way we perform CPR, and I think that was a major motivation in putting out this consensus statement. We want to really make sure that we have a clear message to everybody about what it takes to have high-quality CPR, because with high-quality CPR, we can save more lives. It's as simple as that.
So for those listening, then, list those stages, steps, or key points that you want to instill in folk to deliver that high-quality CPR.
Yeah, it's as simple as the fingers on your hand. You know, it's push hard. You want to be pushing at least 51 millimeters in an adult. You want to push fast. You want to push at least having a chest compression rate of 100 to 120. You want to allow full recoil, making sure that you're not having any residual leaning on the chest. You want to not excessively ventilate, so keeping your ventilation rate down below 12 breaths per minute. And making sure that you're minimizing interruptions in the chest, so that you're optimizing the amount of time that there's blood going to the heart and brain.
And, of course, we're making it easier for folk to learn. The hands-only CPR kits that now come complete with a video in both English and Spanish are out there and being used very widely, and I think that's a great step in progression as well.
Absolutely. I think we want to keep the message simple, because it's simple. It's chest compressions are all about blood flow, and it doesn't need to be complicated. And we also know with the chest compression only that some blood flow is better than no blood flow. So if we can get our community bystander rates up, we can save more lives that way.
And I think also with the kits, for example, I'll stay that for a second, that we have a philosophy back at our shop that we used to have great days of CPR where we did it once a year. With these kits now, that every day is a great day to learn CPR, and that's a message you're very much conveying here as well.
Absolutely, and it's easy. It's not hard to do. Once you're good at it, you want to be better. I think that's it's infectious, and that's the audience that we're having out there.
That's certainly infectious. Of course, this is an EMS audience, and everybody is being very competitive, as we saw the Australians, the guys from London, and other organisations have been in there. But, of course, this infectiousness will pervade, and more and more people will learn this year. I think I have a feeling it's going to be a great year for CPR skills.
I agree. I think one of the things that's been really exciting about this is the success of being able to measure CPR, be able to tell us what high-quality CPR simplifies the message, and that's the goals that we need to achieve. But what we're seeing out there is the different ways different teams are achieving those goals. So we saw a two-person team achieve the same metrics as a five-person team. And we saw people who were defibrillating first versus priming the heart with 2 minutes of CPR. And those questions are things that we as pre-hospital or hospital providers want to debate, but nobody wants to debate how we do high-quality CPR. That's push hard, push fast, allow full recoil, minimize interruptions, and don't overventilate.
So we're constantly seeking to improve CPR outcomes, and of course within the EMS industry, if we want to call it that, the pre-hospital environment, we're using the Utstein measure as one way of just showing how well we are performing. Now, of course, it's a very narrow cohort of patients once you Utstein yourself down to the outcome, but nevertheless, it's a measure. So how can we use those benchmarks to improve across the country and the world?
I think there's a number of different things we can use for those benchmarks. It's figuring out where there are similarities and where there are differences. We talk about differences in patient population as the reasons for our outcomes, but we know that there's wide variability in CPR, and that there doesn't need to be. So by having the Utstein template out as to defining what our outcomes are and what our measurables are, we can compare with each other. What are we doing well? What can we learn from each other, and where's the next step that we need to take to continue to improve? No matter where you are, if you're whatever your survival rate, the next day is you got to be better.
Right, and of course the Resuscitation Academy was held here. That hails originally back from King County, Seattle. They have a phenomenal rate of survival out there, and of course we all look to them for our top tips. And in fact, the Resuscitation Academy has now moved across the East Coast in Maryland as well. So that's really good, and I think it's organisations like that are really going to help us get better. But what do you think?
They're clearly the leaders in the field. I think that, from our quality improvement data from that evidence, they're leaders in the field because they work at it. And no matter what happens, they don't rest on their laurels. At least that's what my knowledge of the Resuscitation Academy is train high quality and train better, train the next generation. And so I think that we need to learn those lessons from them.
Now, going back down to the AHA challenge in the exhibit hall today, just before we walked up to have a chat, there was a team from a volunteer rescue squad, and their rate of CPR was phenomenal, and the rhythm was excellent, and they finished. And one of your team members said, "So how often do you do this?" He said, "We practice every day."
Yeah,
every day.
And for me, that's as a volunteer scientist for the American Heart Association, I think that's what keeps you going. Is people want to do the right thing. People want to save lives, and we need to get them clear instructions on how to do it. It's really been an inspiring day.
That's good. Now, of course, there are cross sections of our own society here in the United States that may be reluctant to have a go, to get involved. I mean, what would you think we should do about that?
I think that's a great question. I think we need to get the word out that CPR saves lives. I think sometimes from TV or from other media, sometimes people see CPR as futile, and it's clearly that it's not. The studies that have shown that when people train well and perform high-quality CPR, that we save lives. I think we also need to get the message out there that there's variability among systems. I don't think people know to advocate for high-quality CPR in the systems that they live in. So making sure that that's an expectation that when someone comes to the rescue, they are trained in high quality CPR. And then the third thing is that people should know is that we should be measuring this. You know, you would think that with such an important thing, when someone's lives at stake, that we would be measuring our outcomes. But unfortunately, there are EMS systems out there that they don't look at their, how well they're doing their CPR. That's just something that they do, and we need to change that.
What we're finding in Richmond now, and the greatest ambassadors to learn CPR that we now have, and I didn't say this in the sort of preamble, but we're now bringing survivors back to meet their crews and to meet their bystanders that have really good cerebral scores, great outcomes, and they are ambassadors for CPR now in our system, because they can see, and actually they come back and take a CPR class as well because they hadn't done one before they had their arrest. Mm-hmm. But they are the best ambassadors for learning this that we've certainly found as well, and we use them ruthlessly.
Yeah. No, I think a personal experience is a lot of what motivates people for impacting change. Actually, right before we walked in, one of the contestants, the group, there were two compressors. One was compressing deep enough and one wasn't. And when I asked her, how did she know to compress so deep? She said, I had a cardiac arrest in the hospital my first time, and I saw him arrest and die. And I'm never going to let that happen again. I saw the look in his eyes is what she said. Another story is as you mentioned, I normally work in the pediatric intensive care unit. We had a parent watch us perform resuscitation on their daughter, and afterwards she came up to us and she said, "That's a violent act." And I think getting the word out that CPR is a violent act. If we're doing it right, we're pushing hard. And it's no longer called chest massage for a reason. We need to be pushing hard. We need to be pushing fast. We need to be getting that 25 to 30% of blood flow that we can get with CPR, and it will make a difference. And I think that's the one of the messages we need.
So one of the interesting things that all the two frequently asked questions that we often get when we go out into the community to do CPR, of course, is question one is, am I going to get sued for doing this? And question two is, am I going to break a rib? Well, of course, we know the answer to the rib-breaking question. It's around the fact that, you know, what would you rather be, you know, broken rib or not here? But, I mean, what do you say about folk that are worried about litigation?
I agree with you that we have to make sure that whatever barrier that's stopping people from putting two hands on the chest, pushing hard, pushing fast, we need to get rid of. Whether or not it's litigation, fear of being sued, fear of being, if they report, if they're afraid of calling authority because of socioeconomic or other political problems, or, you know, what we were talking about earlier is if they just don't think it works, that's just something we need to change. CPR is effective when it's done well.
Yeah. I think in the majority of states, and I don't know exactly how many there are, but there is a Good Samaritan law, for example, in place. But you'd be surprised the amount of people don't realise that.
Absolutely.
And perhaps, you know, AHA and all the local authorities can play a part in maybe highlighting that.
Absolutely. I think whatever we need to do to change our culture so that it's an expectation that you do CPR. There are places in the world that have much higher bystander CPR rates than the United States. And it's because it's expected that that's what you would do if someone falls next to you. I think it can be a complex question, though, because we know that the majority of people who fall next to us from cardiac arrest are people that we know and love. In that situation, it's I don't think it is as simple as people make it out to be, but it is that important. It's the people that we love are the people that we're going to save.
And some of the survivors that we've had back, of course, as I said before, they do a class. But, of course, they bring their whole extended family back with them to do a class as well, because they now all need to know this skill that saved mum, dad, and actually these days son or daughter. Mm-hmm. And so it's good to have that back. But, Pete Meaney, thank you very much for joining me. It's been a real pleasure to meet you, and continue, please, to push hard and fast for this important skill.
Absolutely. I really appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Great.
Well, that's all for this time. It was a pleasure to interview everybody up at Washington, D.C., particularly the guys from London. I always enjoy interviewing paramedics and medics from around the world, because if you're listening here at home in the U.S., you can hear that everybody's the same. Everybody has the same issues. Everybody has the same concerns. Believe me, everybody has the same sense of humour, because for everybody, it's not a job, it's a way of life. And everybody around the world in our pre-hospital, mobile integrated healthcare environment does it because they care for the patient. Simple as that. So, until next time, I've been Rob Lawrence. Word on the Street was produced in Richmond by Jessica Castle. Bye for now.